My name is Rick, and I am an alcoholic. Sobriety date, March 4th of 09, because of the card that I had that said that's when I met with my counselor for the first time. So that's what I use. As most alcoholics, I really don't know what my sobriety date is. That card just tells me that that was a date. So I don't think I drank after that, which was lucky. I have a home group, Warrenton Big Book. I've been doing Big Book since the day I got sober. Actually, the third day I got sober. The first day I got sober, I got to do a 12 and 12. We did the 11th step, which I don't remember anything about. I'll cover that a little bit later. Most people like to start with what it was like. I like to start with what happened. I have no idea. Super Bowl Sunday, 2009. I strolled off the airplane at Dulles from Anchorage. And as my normal way of traveling, I was pretty well. I slept the entire trip, or passed out for the entire trip, and woke up and said, huh, you know, now that I'm here with my daughter, I will prove that I'm not an alcoholic. So I decided I was not going to drink that week because I was down here for about 4 days. I was actually in the building that I work in today. I'd been back and forth numerous times for different jobs, different workshops and conferences and other things there, training. So I decided I'm not going to drink because I can prove I'm not an alcoholic. Other than the fact I had to have a beer to stop that shaking that typically happens when you decide you're not going to drink anymore. So I made it through those 4 days. I think I drank maybe a total of 3 beers, which is pretty good for someone who drinks like I do. Because I knew when I got home, I got to finish and continue with what I was doing before, which was pick up a half gallon and start my weekend when I got back home. And then it rolls along, and now I can't sleep without drinking. I can't eat, throwing up every morning. Chipped a tooth, don't remember how I did it. I figured out about 4 years ago how I actually chipped my tooth. Got replaced. But anyway, I wake up after work, I go home, pick up my half gallon, still had some left. Somewhere around 2 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday, I have a conversation with God. It's the only way I can explain it. I have no idea what happened. I was told, you will not make it to the end of this year. You will not see your daughter graduate. You are going to die. If you do not do something, you're going to die. I don't care what you do, but I'm just telling you right now, you won't see Christmas. About 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm passed out. I wake up at 7 a.m., call my doctor, say, I've got a sinus infection. I need to go and see my doctor. So I go in, and doctor goes, yeah, you have a sinus infection. He says, take some Sudafed, you'll be fine, because I can't take medication with the job I have. And he walks out, and he comes back because he forgot something. And he grabbed me and he says, is there anything else? And I said, yeah, doc. I said, I think I'm an alcoholic. And he's out the door, and all of a sudden he just stops, and he spins. It's just like in a cartoon. He spun on his heel, shuts the door, turns around, and comes right up to me. He was about this tall. I said, what? I said, I think I'm an alcoholic. How much do you drink? I said, I'm about five gallons a week now. He goes, oh, yeah, that probably qualifies. He says, I've helped people stop drinking, moderate. He goes, but not that. He says, you need help. I was like, desperate. First time in my life I've been honest with somebody, told somebody exactly what's going on in my life. No idea what's going to happen next. He asked his nurse, give me the list of treatment centers in Anchorage. I wound up. He gives me one. He says, okay, you can't go to that one. Providence. It's an outpatient program, 28 days, so I got to do that. That's how I know what my sobriety date is, because he wouldn't let me leave, of course, until I made that phone call. When I made a phone call, they said, well, we can see you on Tuesday. And the doctor's like, no. He says, you need to see them now. He says, you need to be detoxed badly. And so they let me in. Give me a little test, and I passed. Did really well. So I was honest twice in the same day. It was the first time in decades that I've been honest with anybody, and I've done it twice, once with a person I've known for 10 years, who's my doctor, once with a complete stranger, and she starts asking me those questions that they ask us that we can all lie to, and they just nod and go, yeah, that's nice. Yeah, we have a spot for you on Monday. Don't drink. Can you not drink from Tuesday until Monday? I'm like, no. There's no way I can do that. Somehow I did. When I surrendered to my doctor, the nice thing about my doctor, the thing that saved my life, was my doctor, his residency was at a Native Alaska treatment center, long-term treatment center, where they bring them in from the bush, and they spend years recovering there. He said, you are like that bad. He says, if you stop drinking, you will die, which I believed him. Went home, drank one shot, which, of course, is how we normally drink, which stopped all it. But I was done. I couldn't believe it. Don't know how I made it through. Get into treatment. I have no idea what to expect next. My wife and I, as we're in the process of moving. So we have one of the boxes from 8 years ago that has all of my stuff in it. It has my contract with my employer in it that says if you fail a drug test, you will be terminated. If you do not complete the program, you will be terminated. If you do not follow these procedures, you will be terminated. A little pressure. That Wednesday morning, my subconscious all of a sudden realized what I had just done to myself, which is this woman slides this 12-page contract in front of me where it says a lot of musts in there, which alcoholics don't do musts. But desperate alcoholics, I guess, will do whatever we need to. That's what I wound up doing. I did everything I was told to do by this person, and I wasn't sick or anything. I had two counselors for 19 months trying to work through all the issues that I had that I didn't know I had. I just drink too much. Other than that, I'm a fine person to be around, as long as you're not around me, because I am absolutely intolerable. People cannot stand me. I've got no friends. Nobody has anything that wants anything to do with me. I find these things out, of course, as I get sober. I don't know at the time that I walk in the doors how bad I actually am. But as I'm working through this, in my subconscious the whole time, it's like, you have screwed your life. They're going to fire you. You can't do. There is no way in hell you're ever going to go without drinking. 8 years and whatever it is, 6 months tomorrow. Somehow I did. It's an amazing thing. Go through the program. First meeting, Tuesday night. My introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous is the basement of Viking Hall. I asked, how do I get there? They said, well, you go to the slums, turn left, follow the dirt road to the gravel parking lot with the snowbanks like this. So I walk in and it's packed. I mean, the room is packed. There's about 80 people in there, homeless people. 18 of us from the treatment center, and a whole bunch of people sitting at a table that I found out later were graduates of the treatment center. How do you get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous? You get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what these people showed me. I couldn't stand any of them. I didn't understand why I was there. I'd have no idea why I'm there. I don't look like any of you people, except, well, that guy, I kind of look like him, but I don't look like any of you. And then an Alaska Native who had come in because it was about 15 degrees, so he's inside warming up, and he tells my story, what I got to look forward to if I didn't believe that this program worked. And I was like, huh, a guy I have nothing in common with, or so I thought, just told me how I feel, what I'm thinking, and what my future looks like. For verification, I will go, my first drunk January of 1980, AC/DC. I know, as an, actually 81. I was 15 years old. Best friend in high school. What kind of beer you want? I want a six-pack of Schlitz Tall Boys. I never drank before, so that's what I had. And we go to the concert. So as a bonus, of course, I got stoned for the one of the few times in my life because I'm standing there, and we're in an amphitheater, and this kid, it is, of course, you know what it's like. Great time. Awesome. Can't wait to do it again, which I did through the rest of my high school career and on until I turned 43 years old. I drank all the time. I drank every time I could, as much as I could. There was no social drinking, unless I was in a crowd of people that I didn't really know or that I'm trying to impress and I can socially drink with them until they leave or I leave and I can go and drink the way I drink. And that was from the age of 15 until I stopped. All through high school, did everything I was supposed to. Got scholarships to play sports. Did that for a year. Said, I'm sick of school. Joined the Air Force. Learned how to drink professionally with people much older than myself. That was a bonus in the way I looked at it. Got out, got hired by my employer today. And from the age of 24 until I was 43, I have been drug tested. That's part of a safety-related job is you're drug tested, and you're drug tested randomly at any time. I have never failed a drug test. I've never failed an alcohol, the blow test, piss test, nothing. Never failed a single one. Never been arrested. Never got a ticket. I have a whole lot of nevers. I got a phone call about 2 years ago now from that guy I got drunk with for the first time. His name's Joe. And he sees me on Facebook, and he's like, how come you're so happy? And God, I can't even explain it. And I have no idea why he's calling me. And he says, I go, I'm sober. I said, I stopped drinking back in 2009. I said, that's why I'm happy. I said, I changed. And he goes, how? So I started working with him. He lived in Phoenix. I live here. So I'm working with him through the book. But he's telling me all about my high school because I can't remember anything about high school. My memory pre-February 9th of 2009, there's sporadic pieces of that I know today. But he's telling me all about, remember this? I'm like, no, Joe, I don't remember anything about high school. I'm telling you, nothing at all. I said, my 20s, I know where I lived. I said, I don't remember anything about my 20s. My 30s, don't even ask me about my 30s. My 30s, I was busy. But he's telling me, and he tells me what my future looked like, because he's 52 years old, and I was 51 at the time. He got to go visit Joe Arpaio's tent city 3 times. He got to wear the special bracelets that the police like to put you in. He got to wear the little thingy on his ankle. He got the little thing in his car. He got to pick up trash on the side of the road in Phoenix in the summertime. He told me what I did not have, I didn't do. And I was like, when they talk about why we come to these, why I was told by my sponsor, Big Book 12 and 12 speaker meeting. You will hear your story. When I heard my story from someone who was still living the story that I no longer had, my timeline had ended, and I was doing this. I was like, wow. That's how I know it works. I know the hell he went through. And he tells me exactly what happens. Getting a divorce. Kids won't talk to me. Brother died. My dog just died. I said, oh. I said, those are great reasons to get sober. Which, for the 10 weeks I worked with him, he stayed sober. I don't know what happened after that. I kept telling him, you've got to get a home group. You have to have a home group. You need a service position. You need a sponsor that can look you in the eyes. I can't look you in the eyes on a phone. You can lie to me all day on a phone. But the person sitting across from you, staring at you and asking those questions while you're lying to them will help you become honest. As my career, I will go back, and as I go through this, one of the things I noticed as we're going through this history of my awards that I've gotten, and my wife was like, wow, she said, you know, we should probably keep these. I was, yeah, whatever. And things that I had done. And she said, you did this while you were drinking, like you drank. I said, yeah. I said, I did things that other people wouldn't do because nobody else wanted to do it because they were afraid of failure. Well, if I failed, you might catch me, and then maybe someone's going to help me get out of this hell that I've been living in for 10 years where all I do is drink, work, pass out, repeat, almost 10 years of this repetitive hell, and it will not stop. I read a story last night in the big book. She called it the express train through hell. AA got me off of that and got me onto a nice, softer, gentler path that made my life significantly better today than it ever has been. I kept trying to do things other people couldn't do. The thing is, they're now doing the things that I wrote. We were creating stuff. It didn't even exist at the time. It took them 10 years to get to the point where what I wrote, we do. We've been doing it now for almost 5 years. But it took me 3 years of hard drinking with Russians and Japanese and other FAA employees to get this done. And she's like, you did this. She said, I couldn't even tie my shoes when I was drunk, and you're doing this. I said, nobody ever said anything. They were like, good job. Keep going. Keep doing what you're doing. Nobody ever said anything. As my day progressed from this day, 1 year after I got sober, I bought a motorcycle. I couldn't ride when I drank because I drank in such a manner that driving a car was bad enough, but riding a motorcycle probably would have been really a bad idea. So I bought a motorcycle. Well, the week that I had 1 year, I picked up my 1 year chip, and 2 days later, the job I have today shows up on the job website. And it's like, they call them coincidences. And at a year sober, that's a coincidence that this happened. Well, my daughter's graduating high school in two months. She's looking at all these colleges all around the Northwest. And I'm going, Virginia, they have a really good public university system. And I have a job offer. All I have to do is fill out this paperwork and I'll be selected, which is what happened. So I get picked up. I come here, bought my house, and she's through college. Everything that was supposed to be done, she got to watch the worst of my drinking. She got to watch the beginning of my recovery. And that one counselor I had was constant. How's your relationship with your daughter? I said, I want to talk about my daughter. I want to talk about me. I want to talk about how people are screwing me over. This is bullshit that I got to be here, and I got to do this, and I got to do that. And you people keep making me do all these things. He said, that's really nice. Shut up. How's the relationship with your daughter? How's the relationship with your family? How's the relationship with your coworkers today? One of the great things about Alcoholics Anonymous is you get new friends. Because the friends I hung around with at work were as angry as I was. And we would sit around and get each other as angry as we possibly could. When I got sober and realized that my biggest problem was everybody else, it meant that my biggest problem was me. And when I started working on me, all of a sudden I had new friends. Not many of them at work. Very few of them at work. They're all out here. And they're all over the country now. Because this is a hell of a lot better than what I was doing. And as I work through this, and I've done this, and I get my new friends, and I begin to work this program, and I do it. At 56 days, I started my fourth step. It's a little soon. My third step, we did the third step prayer. I told my sponsor, I said, I still don't believe in God. I said, but I am willing to believe that it works because you believe in God. I said, I'm just going to keep following you and do whatever it is you have to say. I came out of a speaker meeting on a Friday night, and all day long I'd been thinking about doing nothing but drinking. I want to go drink. I need to drink. I'm 2 months sober, and this is a bunch of crap. There's nothing. I'm fine. Alcohol is completely squeezed physically out of the body. Alcohol has not yet been squeezed out of that sponge we call a brain. And I'm standing in the grocery store. Liquor stores are inside grocery stores in Alaska. And I'm standing across the hallway from it, and in walks one of the guys who's at the meeting. He goes up to the customer service. He buys a pack of cigarettes. Well, now my brain is going, now you can't go in there because he's going to see you come out. And if you come out, he's going to know that you were drinking. He's going to tell your sponsor, and then all hell's going to break loose. So that's not going to work very well. So God intervened and brings this guy in, and I make it through the day. I make it all the way through the night, wake up the following day, called my sponsor, told him everything. I said, I got to start my fourth step because I don't know why I want to drink. All I wanted to do was drink. I said, I've done the worst fourth step in the history of four steps, but I did a great fifth step. The fourth step was, why do I want to drink? Remember, I can only remember 30, now about 85 days prior to from the day I got sober, about 3 weeks before to that day, and I can't remember much of that. So it's a very ugly, very undetailed, except for the fact that there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of resentment in that fourth step. And as we work through this, and I get done, and he's like, okay. He says, well, what about this? He says, have you ever done this? And I went, yeah. He said, I got drunk my first time when I was 13, and then two older guys from high school beat us up, threw my bike in the dumpster, and took our beer. I said, yeah, that was me. So that's what I did. He goes, that's probably why we get along, because I know who you are. He lived in Texas. I lived in Phoenix. But we're all alcoholic, and we all think the same. It's exactly the type of shit we would do. So he works me through this. And then I find out, as we're progressing through, he's got a daughter that's 2 years older than mine and one that's 2 years younger than mine. So I'm finding out what my daughter is planning in her little mind. And I'm asking him questions because his is a little older. He said, oh, you would not believe what my daughter did yesterday. I said, what'd she do? And mine does the setup for that exact thing. Well, I already have somebody who has experience in this little thing. So we squash that little bug quickly. And I said, hey, has your daughter ever done this? And he goes, the older one, no. He said, the younger one is trying to do that. I said, well, this is what I did. He goes, all right. So now all of a sudden, I'm giving family advice to an alcoholic, which really helped with the current relationships I have with my stepdaughter and my stepson, the daughter-in-law, grandson. Because of this program, I have an ability today to listen. And one of the things I had never done in my entire life was say, I don't know. I always knew the answer. If I didn't know the answer, I would bullshit you well enough that you knew that I knew the answer because you couldn't find it anywhere else. And one day at work, somebody asked me a question, and I said, well, I don't know. I'll help you find the answer. I said, but I don't know. And the entire area just, like, went quiet. Rick doesn't know the answer to the question. I've never heard that before. That began a series of freedom I had never known before. The freedom to say, I don't know. The freedom to say, I can't help you at this time. The freedom to say, no. When I learned to say no, there was another level of sobriety I didn't know that I could get to, because I wasn't over-scheduling myself. I wasn't over-helping. I I had gotten to that point where I was trying to do a few too many things at once, and that's not good for my sobriety either. Working is I spend a lot of time at work. Meetings, I do very few meetings, but I always do my big book, try to do my 12 and 12, make this meeting every time I can. And every once in a while a discussion meeting. But as I worked through this program, things have gotten better. And one of the things, as we read, everybody reads, as you can see, I've got all kinds of stuff in my book. I love the chapter on acceptance. But everybody likes the acceptance prayer. I like what he says at the end of the book. Acceptance is the key to my relationship with God today. I never just sit and do nothing while waiting for him to tell me what to do. Rather, I do whatever is in front of me to be done, and I leave the results up to him. However it turns out, that's God's will for me. On Friday nights, after our speaker meeting, we used to go to Pizza Man. First 3 weeks that I was sober, I wouldn't go because I had to get up at 5 in the morning to go to Providence for my Saturday classes. But then I was thinking, because I'm really keen, they're going out for pizza. Pizza means beer, so this Alcoholic Anonymous thing can't be that bad. If they're going out for pizza, that means they get to drink beer. Okay, I'm in. So Dwight, who was our old-timer, takes me and another newcomer to this, to Pizza Man. We order pizza, and they're walking by with the schooners, and I'm just like, and he orders Pepsi One in a can. And the guy I'm with orders a water, and I said, I love a water. But what he did, and what I've found throughout this program, is he would ask a question. It was just kind of like he would just pull a card out and he would just throw it on the table, this little question, and we would start to discuss it. And I got to develop a relationship with another alcoholic who was in the same boat I was. He was sober about a week longer than I was. Another one who was sober about a week less than I was. And another one of the guys that was an old timer to me used to throw, we had this Eaton meeting in Palmer. It's about 40 minutes from where I lived in Eagle River. Last Saturday of the month, it gets people from Homer, which is 300 miles to the south, and Fairbanks, which is 300 miles to the north. And all around the state, people come to this meeting. There's 300 people in this meeting. It's a huge Eaton meeting. But what I didn't know that Raymond was doing to us was he was putting us into a car, and we're having a 45-minute meeting. Old-time AA, as a lot of the old-timers around here used to do, get in a car. I didn't know what he was doing. But you're stuck in the car, and Raymond would do the same thing. He would go, so how was your day? How was that guy that you couldn't stand? And I said, we have no relationship today. He won't talk to me. He goes, why? I said, because I said hello. He went, yeah, that usually pisses him off, doesn't it? You were smiling too, I'll bet. And I said, yeah, probably. He said, yeah. He says, angry people hate that. So I learned. And we did this every month. And it was just a tremendous. He was doing that personal, one-on-one with four of us in the car. And just, I mean, great meeting. Go up there. It's a three-hour meeting. Eating. You're sitting with people you don't know. You're listening, learning, and most important, sharing life with somebody else. It was something I had to learn here. I didn't understand it. I didn't know how selfish I was until I got here and found out that I would do for other people after I got done what I needed done for me first. Then I would help you. I try not to do that today. Some days I still do that where I'll get selfish and self-centered. But it's not for the entire day. It's for that period of time when all of a sudden in the back of my head you get that sick feeling that says, did you really mean to do that? And I went, oh, no. You need to help somebody. So that's what I did. And that's what I do. Earlier, someone was saying, when I take off my clothes, things get really bad. One of the things that happened when he said that was a memory from about 1981. She was a single mother with two teenage boys, so, you know, whose party house was with a pool. Well, we were out jumping in the pool, skinny dipping before everybody showed up. Well, they locked the doors. Didn't know the doors were locked, so they're, my clothes are inside. I'm not. So there I am, standing there, beating on the doors, going, would someone please open the door? I already got a pretty good buzz on, so that was my skinny dipping story. Most of my drinking was done in a desert, a lot of deserts because of where I lived. I lived in Arizona in high school, the Air Force. I joined the Air Force to go overseas. They sent me to New Mexico for 4 years, so I spent 4 years at Alamogordo. Joined the FAA, thought I was going to go somewhere else. They sent me to Palmdale, California, another desert. So now, you know, I've got 18 years of desert living, and I have the skin to prove it. If you can't see my ear, she had to take another chunk of my ear off. Because drinking and sun worshiping are a great combo, too. So I think I bought a boat and put two of her kids through college. So, and actually, she drives that Range Rover with the supercharged motor. So that was probably one of the other surgeries she did to me. But as I go through this, and I do this every day, I try to live these principles. Today, our house is on the market. Been on the market for a while. And I said, okay, I'm retiring. I said, if I retire and prove, I've been playing this game with God where I'll file my paperwork when you give me a contract on my house. He goes, okay, we can play that game. Since God doesn't have a watch, he doesn't really care. I filed my paperwork. I said, okay, fine. I am submitting. I am surrendering my will. And in 4 weeks, I'm done. Come what may, doesn't matter to me. Fully trusting in the process every day. Making these decisions based on a lot of experience and leaps of faith. I remember while I was sitting at Pizza Man one day, they had the little card, and it had a George Carlin saying. And George Carlin, his saying was, do what's next, which is basically what Paul O. says at the back of his chapter. I do what's in front of me. Do what's next. I've always heard, do the next right thing. What's the next right thing? I'm an alcoholic. I have a really good track record of making really bad decisions. Financially, relationship-wise, any way you want to look at it. Bad, 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 bad decisions. I've made a lot of them. I have a lot of experience. But I do what's next. And I was like, I can understand that. That made sense to me. I do that today. And we'll see what happens tomorrow. But, as I said, amazing because I start getting these thoughts that I hadn't had before. As I get sober, I get to have experience, memories that I didn't see before, memories that I've just said that I don't care about as they come up, like that skinny dipping story and a few others, but those aren't for here. I was brought through this book quickly by my own choice because I had to do the steps. I was goal-oriented, do the steps. Get the steps done. Well, when we get to step 10, my sponsor says, okay, he says, now we're going to work 10, 11, 12 because they are the same to you. They are daily maintenance steps, and you need to understand that if you do 10, you do 11, and 12 will make 10 and 11 easier for you, which I didn't understand at the time. I do today. But then one of the other ones, step 3, turn my will and my life over to the care of God, I have to do that every day. It's a daily step. People said, yeah, I've done the third step. It's like, did you do it today? They say when we, one of the prayers a lot of people do in the morning, for myself up to thee, to do with me as you will. We do a third step prayer. We do a seventh step prayer. Why do these defects keep showing up in my life? 6 and 7 are actually daily steps. My character defects, I carry them around with me all the time. Sometimes those character defects aren't a hindrance to my life. When they're glaring and I notice them, they are. Sometimes being stubborn, which is a very bad trait, is very good. Every one of our character defects, our character traits, we carry with us. We use. I use them every day. Some of them I don't want anymore. The swearing part, it took me a long time. It took almost 2 years for me to not drop an F-bomb about every third word. I used to swear constantly. But when I got over being angry and started to chase serenity, one of my impediments to serenity was swearing. So if I'm swearing, I am basically telling you to get away from me. I hadn't noticed that until I was in polite company, which is what happens when you come to an AA meeting and women are there. And I just remember one day this woman, she was from Scotland. She was a grandma. And she goes, "Dear, must you say fuck all the time?" I said, "I don't say it all that would." I go, "What the fuck are you talking about?" She goes, "Like that. Must you say that word all the time?" So I had to consciously, I'd come into the meeting and I would see her sitting there and I was like, okay, now I've got to be on my best behavior. One little suggestion from an alcoholic changed the entire way in which I carried on conversations with other people. Even with men that I worked with, where swearing was a fairly common occurrence. All of a sudden, I'm not swearing as much. Well, when you're not swearing as much, I'm not angry or directionless or whatever it is that causes me to do that. My stepson, his wife, and our grandson was here 2 weeks ago, and my wife was going to throw away all of my Pilsner glasses that I had collected over the past 30 years, and two of them are from San Diego. They're the Arrogant Bastard Ale. It's a T-shirt that I bought also. It's a great beer when I drink beer. I said, just keep those. I said, because remember, you have kids that drink beer. I said, they'll love this. And so Harry gets it. And he looks at it and goes, "Arrogant Bastard." I said, yeah, read it. It'll tell you. "You're not worthy." The week I showed up in Anchorage Center, this girl who was in the training department says, "You are the most arrogant bastard I've ever met in my life." I said, "True, and I'll wear my T-shirt tomorrow to prove it." So for 10 years, I was one of the most arrogant bastards you'll ever have met. Until I got knocked to my knees. And until I had to come into this program, surrender, and completely be humiliated to find the humility that I had to find. I couldn't find it. Hard-headed, always right. I mean, I went down all the list of all the things that I do. And then I had someone as we're riding around. They asked me, "What's the difference between arrogance and confidence?" I said, "Arrogance is anger aimed at someone to keep them at the distance. Confidence is the ability to allow people to get close. When they know that even if the answer is not really the correct answer. If it's confidently performed, people will follow anyway. Bad ideas, we all have bad ideas. But a bad idea confidently executed usually doesn't turn out too bad. And I had someone ask me, and I've said in meetings numerous times, how do you know it's a bad idea? I said, I have three criteria for making a decision. Will it kill me, kill you, or cause serious bodily injury to other people? I said, if it is a no to all three of those, it can't be a bad decision. It might be a stupid decision, but it can't be all that bad. Remember, I don't know what the next right thing is, but I do know what I need to do next. And when I apply that rule, it gives me a lot of latitude. I said, financial damage. I said, I've already done a lot of financial damage to myself, so I'm not worried about losing a few dollars. But to be able to make a decision and carry on and be happy and go, well, that didn't work out so well, because now I can say, yep, I was wrong. That was a really dumb idea. We probably should have done what you said. All through my life growing up, my mother was never an Al-Anon, but she used to hit me with that Al-Anon stuff all the time. She would go, I would tell her my grand ideas, and she would go, well, if I was you, I wouldn't do that. But you're going to do it anyway, so let me know how it works out for you. So I would do it, and then she goes, so how did that idea of yours work out? Well, this is what happened. She goes, yeah. You going to do it again? I said, no, I won't do that, but I've got a better idea. So we always, and she would go, yeah, okay. I didn't know she was Al-Anon, and I don't think she knows that she's done Al-Anon, but that's how I was always allowed to make mistakes. So I've never been afraid of failure. This program allows me to fail and say, yes, I am one too. And smile about it. Okay. Well, that was a bad idea, but it was fun though, wasn't it? You ride around with Justine, and Justine's like, where are we going to go? I said, we're going this way. I don't take straight lines when I drive, so you never know where you're going to wind up when I'm driving. I know we're going to get where we're going. We just don't know how long it's going to take to get there. And she's like, I said, well, look, cows. Isn't that pretty? Oh, look out for the deer. She's like, you have no idea where you're at. I said, yes, I do. We're in Virginia. I said, I am confident we are in the Eastern time zone. And Virginia is a small state. I said, we'll be out of it in any time now. I came from Alaska down here where Virginia is a small state. But one of the things that we've done since I've gotten married and found a partner who is willing to do these crazy ideas. Virginia is an awesome state. We have, for the past 6 years, we have vacationed 1 week in some part of this state, a different part of this state. We have yet to stay in the same place twice on any of our vacations. That's something that alcoholism did not allow me to do when I lived in Alaska. I never went to Fairbanks. Fairbanks was 6 hours north of my house. I never went there. There were a lot of things I didn't do because I had more important things to do. When I moved here, I said, I will not live in the box that I lived in when I lived up there. I squandered a lot of opportunities being drunk, wasting my life. I moved here, and it has been a completely different experience. Willing to do something different, willing to go and explore, not worried about what time is it. I don't have to worry about going to bed at 1 o'clock in the morning, getting up at 4, because I didn't drink till 1, pass out, and have to get up at 4. I was doing something, and woke up. You know, I wake up tired, but I don't wake up hungover. So those are the great things about AA, and that's what I'm trying to do today. We're moving and planning all these trips. I have a trip to Alaska to make in about 5-6 years when our grandson is old enough to hold a fishing pole. that can hold a 20-pound fish. So I got to wait till he's about 7 or 8 years old to be able to do this. But that'll be great. I get to plan these things. I get to go, okay, we're going to do this. I don't have to plan where is the liquor store on my way home from work. I can't go to that one today because I went there yesterday. I had a rotation of three of them, and I hit them each Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, each one of them. So only once a week I stopped at this one store. So, you know, when you buy a half gallon at this store, it doesn't look like you're buying three half gallons a week. It only looks like you're only buying one. Planning. I was an alcoholic planner. Planned for a lot of things. Never executed. I planned a lot. I talked a lot. I dreamed a lot. But I never did a lot. Today I try to do a lot. This program, by living it and doing it every day, something that somebody had sent to me one day. Finish each day and be done with it. You have done what you could. Some blunders and absurdities no doubt crept in. Forget them as soon as you can. Tomorrow is a new day. Begin it well and serenely and with too high a spirit to be encumbered with your old nonsense. Ralph Waldo Emerson. I got that about 6 years ago when I first got here. And it's been taped and kept in my big book ever since then. And I've sent this saying to a few other people. What is their days? Their days just seem to go and go and go and go. And it's like, be done with it. Finish today. Worry about it. Don't worry about today, tomorrow. Don't worry about tomorrow. Just be there. Which is how I got here. And I love this. And that is all I have. Thank you.